So we're doing talking about Ecclesiastes, the theme being life under the sun. And back in chapter 1, what was that theme verse that we started off with, that Jack introduced us to? What's one of the themes of life under the sun?
Vanity.
All is vanity. All right, let's see. I'm didn't make... putting in the form of equation, that's what I do. So we're going to see life under the sun, he talks about all his vanity. That's the first part of the equation. And chapter 1 and verse, it's mentioned many times, but chapter 1 verse 14, as he says, I have seen everything done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. And he proceeds to, now through the rest of the book, show how that is true. And again, life under the sun means he's considering what? Life with God or without God? Without God. If God is not in the picture, if as some people in this world espouse that we somehow came to being from one little one-celled creatures or whatever that is, then all is vanity. So we're going to be continuing. We looked at chapter 5 last week, the majority of it. And we looked at work and money, and we ended with, moreover, all his days eats in darkness and much vexation, anger, and sickness and anger. I got the sickness today, but... If God's not in the picture, then what? You work hard, you worry about the money, you worry about the business, you worry about everything else. You get upset about how the politics of the day are going, right or left or up or down or whatever. And with God in the picture, what's the use? What's the use? You can't take it with you. As we showed, the emperors of China and Egypt tried to take it with them. And what happened? Did they take it with them? And who ended up with it? Grave robbers and museums. Probably more grave robbers than museums. And so in chapter 5, as we ended that, we sort of left last week with it being very depressing. It's like, why get out of bed? Hey, there's some mornings I go to work and I'm going, why am I here? You got a bunch of kids who are half asleep or whining or, oh, and that's just Dane. Oh. But we get that. But of course we know the chapter markings are put there by man, but at the close of this chapter, he's going, there is some good. There is some good. And so life under the sun, learning life's lessons. A few things came to mind as I read this, the rest of chapter 5, and we're going to get chapter 6 here. A couple things came to being as far as, he says, behold, I have seen what is good and fitting. Okay, so he's going to say, what is good in this life under the sun? What is there? And a couple things sort of summarize some of this is that, yes, there is evil under the sun. One of my favorite Agatha Christie movies. It's a great old time Agatha Christie movie by that name. But small moments of enjoying life, or life is not about waiting for the storm to pass, but learning to dance in the rain. To learn to enjoy even when the bad things are happening. How can we do that? We're going to get to some passages where Paul talks about that. And some of the letters of his epistles. But as we get to this, last, as I said, the last of this circle of life, 16 and 17, to come back to it, he said, this also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. What gain is there to him who toils under the wind and much vexation and anger? It's sort of like the circle of life. We have bad news and good news and bad news and good news and then bad news and bad news and bad news and then good news and bad news and bad news and bad news and then a little more good news. And it seems to happen that way, and the bad seems to be the good. And it seems, what, circle of life, know, the Disney in me there is, ah, Zavinia. And what happens in the movies? You have good things happen, then bad things happen, then good things happen, and it all comes back around in a circle. The water cycle, happening right above us. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote, "The best thing one can do when it's raining, let it rain." You can't fight it. We've got to take it for what it is and see what good there is in what we're experiencing. And that's hard sometimes. So what should I work for? Because he just got done saying, you know, there's much of saying, why? There's much of saying, much anger, it's empty. Why should I work? You know, what advantage does the fool have? You know, what advantage does someone have over the fool? So we're going to see he's going to talk about again, some good news and some bad news. As we're going to finish up chapter 5 with the good news. Then we're back to more bad news. You watch the evening news or look at the newspaper, what's the ratio of good reports to bad reports? It's there. So let's read chapter 5, the end of chapter 5, and we'll have some comments on that. And hopefully you guys have some input as well, because I don't think I can talk for the full 45 minutes. In fact, let me get a volunteer to read verses 18 through 20. Chapter 5, 18 through 20. Kevin?
"Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, for the day is lost. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice with the toil. This is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart."
There's a lot there, actually, these few verses. The good news. Solomon goes, "Behold, look what I have seen. In all this bad news, what's the good?" And he says what? It's good and fitting to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of our life. I'm going to pick on a few people. Wayne, what's that mean to you? Okay. So what's that mean to any one of you? You're going to hear what he means to me here in a moment. But
I think God's designed us to work and provide and derive enjoyment from that. And yes, we're blessed by him, but we have to put some effort out. And he's made that something that brings us joy or brings us some satisfaction.
So the work itself.
The work itself, and comes from that. Recognizing it's a blessing, but we put in effort as well.
Okay. Come on, help out the guy with no voice here. Where's the enjoyment? Where do we find that?
Well, you work your life. You toil under the sun. You have a job. You work for years. And God wants you to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Obviously, there's physical blessings. And he says it's a gift of God. There's nothing wrong with the enjoyment of the things which you work hard for. But I think there's an emphasis here. Yeah, God keeps us occupied with these things as well, but we occupy ourselves. And our attitude should be to enjoy the things which he's provided, but at the same time, remember who you are and what you should do with the things, I think, as well. I mean, it's one thing to enjoy them, but it's another thing to share and to understand that they are blessings from God. Therefore, he's given them to enjoy them, but also use them in his service.
I think one of the keys that we're looking for is eat, drink, find enjoyment, enjoy these physical blessings, as he put, you work, we receive some blessings from the work we do. We're not going to go and find all the proverbs about the sluggard versus the hard worker or those types of things. But the key here is, I think this last piece that I put up here is little snippets. This is the part of keeping things in perspective, is realizing that this is a gift of God. When I get up in the morning and I'm going to school and I know the kids are just they're just awful that day, what do I have to always keep in mind? That my ability to work and perhaps influence some minds towards the good, that's God's gift. Having work is a gift. And when I can sit down to a meal at night with the family, or as I put, Thanksgiving is one of my favorite national holidays. Why? Because it has the three F's of a good holiday: family, food, and football. But it's what it's enjoying those. It's a time to enjoy, sit down, and really to be thankful and enjoy those gifts.
The children of Israel, when they kept God's statutes, His commandments, His judgments, when they followed them and kept them, then they had peace. They would have peace for 40 years at different lengths, and all was well. They ate. They had all that they needed. God provided, and I think that is the key element that we have to remember. God will bless you, yes. He will occupy you with His joy, but with the contingency that you remember Him in all things, and then those blessings will come. But at the same time, if we are self-seeking, if we're looking out just for ourselves and not considering that He's providing these things, how quickly that will end.
Exactly, which is why the key to this enjoying the things we have in this short life under the sun is understanding that they are gifts from God. Not like Nebuchadnezzar when he looked out upon Babylon and said, "Look what I have done." No, right? We saw what God did to him because of that. But rather, who's an Old Testament example of someone who was blessed with much wealth yet realize where they came from? Job, right? Job had the idea, and when they were taken away, what was his response? Naked I came into the world, and the Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. But realizing it's the gift of God and enjoyment, and unlike some people in our culture today, what's this say about the wealthy? If the wealthy realize, and frankly, I think most of us in this room would be considered wealthy by much of the world's standards. As long as is that bad to have blessed with wealth? What does it say there in verse 19? God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them. You're being given wealth, enjoy it. As we know from the New Testament and the various epistles, what? Instruct the rich to be rich in good works and to use that responsibly and realize that it is a gift. It's freely given to you and freely give to others, but it's not a sin to enjoy it. The page turned on me. I didn't even realize it. And to accept his lot and rejoice. All right, what's the word there? Contentment? Contentment? And so, and here's the thing, it's the gift of God, for he, that's mankind, verse 20, will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. I puzzled over this, and if you have a different viewpoint from what I'm about to express, please, let's share it and talk about it. But in Philippians chapter 4, we all know this passage fairly well. Verses 4 through 9. Could I get a volunteer to read that, please? Philippians 4, 4 through 9. Thank you.
Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. The things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you.
To me here, Paul in the letter to Philippians is telling them how God keeps us occupied. By doing what? Practicing the Paul things that they learned and saw and heard from Paul, which deals with focusing on what is right and what is pure and what is honorable and just, and through prayer and supplication. Paul always looked for the good, didn't he? He always, everything he received, he looked at as a gift from God. And I put up there in Acts 16:9, that's where Paul and Silas were in Philippi prior to really establishing the church to a great extent. And where were they? In jail. And what did then the jailer heard them singing? Was Paul and Silas, were they occupied with joy? All right, so when I look at that, for you don't remember much of his day's life because we keep mocking. We're taking day to day under this life and what? Looking for God's gift to us in that day. And I don't know what Paul and Silas were thinking about when they started singing, but obviously there was something worthy to sing of. And so we have the good news. There is good, right? We have a lot of good blessings. No matter how bad things seem to get, there's something good we can find there. Well, that's good news. And so our equation here, life under the sun, we have all is vanity plus what? Good to eat, drink, work seems to cancel each other out. But that's sort of what life under the sun is these two things, isn't it? There's vanity, but realizing what it's from. So as we continue in chapter 6, we have the bad news. Once again, coming back to the bad news. As he continues that, yeah, okay, there is good here, but he continues and he just hits us again. By the way, going back, I almost forgot. In verse 18, he says, I've seen what is good. This is a theme. I'm sort of playing up the themes up there. We see vanity, the idea of vanity many times. But already in this book, at least two times, if not more, in chapter 2 and verse 24 and chapter 3 and verse 13, he uses that same phrase. There's nothing better for a person should eat and drink and find of enjoyment. In chapter 3 and verse 13, also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. It is one of those common themes that he's building. Yes, there's vanity, but there's also good and pleasure to be found in this life. So in chapter 6 here, he says, there is an evil I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God does not give him power to enjoy them. But a stranger enjoys them. This is a little different than what he just said a little bit ago, wasn't it? So let's look at the contrast. Everyone to whom also God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. So which is it? What's the difference between the person who God gives wealth, power, and the power to... What's that power to enjoy them? Because that's the difference. In chapter 5, it's He's given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them. Yet a few verses later in chapter 6, he says, I've given wealth and power and honor and not the power to enjoy it.
I think it rests back, Brad, with the fact of acknowledgement of from whence they came. It's from God, the gift, and if you acknowledge and understand that he's providing them, can wealth blind a person? The fact that they don't put the confidence in themselves, but rather understand it was God who provided, and they acknowledge it, and then he will give you the power to eat from it and to enjoy it, because you acknowledge that it all came through him.
Mm-hmm. Bruce?
I was just going to say that I think it's how you use what you've been given. If you share it, return it, or if you try to build upon it as your own power, it's going to be used differently.
Mm-hmm. Someone in the back had their hand.
It's satisfaction and contentment towards what God has
given. And all three of you, it's coming back to, as Dave just said, it's not realizing whether it's the gift of God or not. And then how you use them. And if we realize it's the gift of God, we'll use it properly. But here, the person who doesn't get that power, who just is working for what? Who's he working for?
Self.
He's working for himself. Because if we're, as chapter 5 said, guarding our steps and we go to the house of God and drawing near and we're keeping God in our lives, who are we working for? We're working as for the Lord, not for ourselves. And so here's someone who's working for themselves, and God's saying, he's not going to get the power to enjoy it. What was the parable of the rich man that Jesus told in the Gospels? But he filled barns and went to build bigger barns. And it was at night. God required his soul. So what was who enjoyed the fruits of his labors?
Somebody
else.
Based on what I see, I think there's some caution there too. You can be a workaholic, and you can work and work and work and just keep amassing and work and not enjoy the fruits of your labor, or take that rest, if you will, and just continue to amass. And I think that's what he's talking about with the barns. They do all this, but then he comes to the knowledge where he says, okay, I've done all this. I need to build bigger barns. Eat, drink, and be merry. Well, again, remembering all the while that God has provided, and he's the one that's made this possible for you. But I think there has to be a medium there to where you don't overdo it as well. Because I've seen that happen with people where they just want to amass all that they can, and in the process, they damage their health, their well-being, and they just cannot function properly.
It's actually a problem in Japan. The culture is such that things for the men are supposed to work so hard, 70, 80 hours a week is expected, and they actually have treatment centers for workaholic or work addiction, and it's a big health issue over in that country. And what Dave's getting there is true. As we get to the next verses, he says he doesn't have the power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity, it's a grievous evil. And he starts to expand on that. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so the days of his years are many. Now, was that an indication of wealth in that day? Yes, if you were the father of huge numbers of kids, and you lived long, that was an indication you were probably very well off. But his soul is not satisfied, getting to what you were talking about, Dave, not satisfied with life's good things, and he has no burial. This is how bad this is. What's better than this man's life? I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. Ouch. Jeff?
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, chapter 5 really is one of the first first chapters, it's coming back around. Chapter 1 is knowledge. Chapter 2 is pleasure. 2 is pleasure and wealth. 3 and 4 get into this power. And you go look at chapter 5, verse 9, verse 12, talking about the king and his position and the fields and not being able to sleep and just the responsibility that starts to build. And now in chapter 6, he's, like you said, he's coming back to some of this again by saying, don't think it's so great. Look back on it. It's all vanity, regardless of which one of those things that you tried to achieve by chasing wind. And coming in today, been there and trying to get back to the priorities as mentioned earlier about regardless of what you have or what you don't have, just always enjoy what you do have, and you won't feel that type of chasing wind. Regardless of what you have been blessed with, or anything you haven't been blessed with, that perspective, continue to challenge yourself with that correct viewpoint, if you will, perspective. Many times you hear these cliches of, well, the glass half full or is it half empty. I think as a Christian, we're always challenged with never looking at it in that kind of paradigm. It's always, it should be always full, not even, and that's the walk.
And you're right, that is our challenge, isn't it? To always see, and even in the worst of times, okay, what is there that's God given me to enjoy? And it gets to us. We mentioned Job earlier. Did his loss, and thanks to his so-called friends that came over, did his loss eventually eat at him and eat away some of that confidence? Yeah, he eventually got to the point where he said some things he shouldn't have, and God answered him, and then it brought him back to his senses. But he's really going to hammer this home. If all you do in life is get up and work hard to accumulate wealth and accumulate wealth and accumulate wealth, and you don't take time to enjoy it, and you just work and work and work and work to accumulate this, a stranger's going to end up with it, but it's better off that you hadn't even been born. At least as far as life under the sun goes, what good has it done you? Because as he said there in the end of chapter 5, it's much what? Verse 17, much vexation and sickness and anger. Someone who works like that is just, that's all they're going to experience. So what good has life under the sun been? And so he said it's better that a stillborn child is better off than he. And he goes to explain that. For it comes in vanity. What's the it? What do you think that is? The stillborn child. Okay, the stillborn child. For the child comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. As we all know, the child who is stillborn, where does that child end up going? To rest with God, to heavenly rest. It has known none of the evils or problems or issues of this world. It has known none of the vanity of life under the sun. And that child's better off because of that. It's hard for us to think of that. As he compares it to this, for using Dave's word, a workaholic. Verse 6, even though he should live 1,000 years, going back to that person who doesn't get, who has all the wealth, and God's blessed him with all these things, but he's not enjoying them. He's not taking the time to put them in the proper context and enjoy them. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good. Do not all go to the same place? What good did it do to work all that time, break your back, but you end up in the same place? It's, as Jeff was getting back to, he's showing what? The vanity. It's just the vanity. I tell you, sometimes, I don't know about other people's work, but sometimes in the realm of education, it seems it's vanity. As we go things over and over and over again, and some of them just never seem to learn. Dave, you look.
We all go the way of the earth, unless Christ should come first. And death is no respecter of persons. We understand that. We all die. What we've done with our life, how we've used it, And there will be that reconciliation in that day that we will look and see. It'd be it's like a flashback of what did you do with your life under the sun? What did you do? How did you work? How did you consider the Lord? What did you do with the things he blessed you with? Was I selfish? Did I lock myself in my home? Did I keep it boarded up? Or was I actually using it in his service and taking the things which he's blessed me with to further the cause of Christ, to get to know my brethren better, to do things that he would see and consider that I'm actually doing it? Not that it's a work salvation, and mm-hmm. I understand that, but out of my faith in him do I pursue forward. That's going to be the end of it when the time comes, because death does not respect any of us. And so how am I going to finish the race?
Exactly. And just a couple of verses we put up there. 1 Corinthians 13, the chapter on love. What does he start off with? If I do all these good things, speak with the tongues of angels, give everything I have to others, have all faith, and then just the personification of the physical image of a righteous person, but do not have love, what's it worth? And simply, it's vanity. That's what made me think about this. Jeff?
Talking about the love and agape love last week makes me think of the one with the money, that might be their struggle. But the person without the money, judging that person how they use their money, that might be their struggle. Come the end of the day, we all have our struggles, and that's where that agape love comes into play. If we don't have that, by doing what's in that person's best interest, by not judging them or by helping them through their struggle, surface-level type perspective instead of knowing the individual, you're not going to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be your conflict. You're going to keep hitting the wall over and over again.
And really what's he saying here, as Jeff put, this struggle is for what? Everybody. Whether it's poor or rich or whatever situation we find ourselves in.
Growth. Mm-hmm. The trials and tribulations that we have that we will build in kindness and love and perseverance and so forth.
And so, I didn't put it up here, but also came to mind was the parable of the talents. God gives us, as he says, he gives to some wealth and power and possessions. The five talents. Type person. You know, he gives us talents. He gives us things to at various levels, whether a little or a lot. And what were the people who got blessed in that parable? The ones who took the talents, went out and used them. And as you talked about, and what you mentioned hiding, and I almost forgot about this, what did the one talent person do? He went and hid it. He locked it away. He didn't use the little he had. For good. For his what? For his good or his master's good? His master's good, right? And that's what we're looking at here. I just put Judas up there, better not to have borne. That was what was said of Judas, right? In the New Testament. And turn to Ephesians 4, because all this comes down to, and Paul sums it up pretty well in Ephesians. Did Paul experience the bad of life? As well as the good. Paul, when he was Saul, he experienced all the good that the Jewish nation had to offer. When he became Paul, he started experiencing all the bad physical things. And in chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, he starts going on. And I wrote the wrong chapter there. I wrote the wrong passage, but it's learning to be content, right? He said, I found to be Philippians 4. It's supposed to be Philippians 4. I wrote Ephesians, sorry. Philippians 4, 11 through 13. After he talks about practice these things, right? He says, what? Not speaking of being, for I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content, satisfied. All right? Snickers, status, that's one of their things. Does it really? Maybe momentarily? Someone saying yes back here, like their Snickers? Okay? Snickers satisfies. Yeah, for a moment, but then what? How much longer later are you wanting that again? So I've learned to be content, to be satisfied. I lost my place. And know how to abound in any and every circumstance. I've learned the secret of facing plenty and of hunger in verse 12, of abundance and need. I can do all things, and that's the key. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So much of our life and our culture is in the pursuit of things. I was watching an old Star Trek episode, and this came up, and so it made me think of it. Spock says, and his words of wisdom at the end of a show, you may find that having is not so pleasing thing as wanting. It's not logical, but it's often true. And so here, even people who, and I don't know his, Leonard Nimoy's, what his spiritual condition was, but I would have to say non-godly type people in the Hollywood area, can write a little bit of wisdom from time to time that almost mimics what Solomon wrote here. You know, as Paul quoted the poets of the Greek day and brought out points. So oftentimes, I want, and then when you get it, oh, then what? I want something else. Now, when we're William's age, it's natural, okay? We haven't learned, right? But as older people, we should be thinking of that. So back to Ecclesiastes. So he finishes off chapter 6. For all the toil of man is in his mouth, but as we said, his appetite is not satisfied. What advantage has the wise man over the fool? Really, in this life, not much, because we end up in the same place. And what does the poor man have over who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. And that's what made me think of that thing from Spock. Better is the sight of the eyes than... I lost my place again, sorry. Than the wandering of the appetite. The wanting is better than the actual having. And this also is vanity and striving after the wind. Hits that again. And he comes back again, Jeff, as you mentioned, to full circle here. That's why I sort of start off with circle of life. Everything comes in circles. Whatever has come to be has already been named. That's what he talked about in chapter 1, right? Whatever has been is what will be. And it is known what man is, and that he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. The more words, the more vanity, and what is the advantage to man? For who knows what is good for man while he lives a few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? We're here for just a little bit. And just a couple of points as we finish up here in the last 5 minutes. In James 4, he talks about what is your life? And he's just summarizing, you are a mist, something that's just here for a little bit. And in planning and working this life and working for riches and so forth, what does he say? Instead, you ought to say, fill in the blank. If the Lord wills, we'll go and do this or that or make this profit or not. It's really saying the same thing. As we all know this fairly well in Psalms 37:23, the steps of a man's way are established by the Lord. As we answer that question, what's he asked there? For who can tell, for who knows what is good for man? What's the answer to that question? God. And really it comes back around to it, and that's this equation. And we could go to chapter 12, verse 12, no, chapter 12 is not verse 12 in the end. What's Solomon's conclusion? All's vanity. You can have a little good if you keep the right perspective, but what's the conclusion? Fear God. That's our conclusion, right? Who knows what's good for man? God. That's their equation of life. It's full of vanity. Enjoy what you can when you can for the blessings of God, and in the end, fear God. And Jeff, I'm glad you remind me of the cycles here, because he hits something here that he's going to repeat in chapter 12. He says, the more words, the more vanity. Are there lots, how many books are there out there that are self-help of how to live a better life? I mean, I suppose they can be counted, but and do they keep getting written? Keep being written? Yeah, they come all the time. And so when I talk to high school students, when I have those opportunities, when they ask me questions that allow me to do this, in chapter 12 and verse 12, I go, this should be a student's, you know, whether high school or college, right? You're going to high school or college, this should be your favorite verse of all the Bible. In Ecclesiastes 12, verse 12, he writes, my son, be aware of anything beyond these. And what were these? The things written by God, God's word. Because they were what? They were like nails firmly fixed that we could hold on to. He says, beyond these, of the making of many books, there is no end, and much study is weariness to the flesh. So there you go, high school, college students. That should be your favorite verse right there. Dane, at school, you got start getting too much from those professors. Ecclesiastes 12:12, read it. Can we, not only with wealth, and sometimes in pursuit of wealth, can you attend all the business seminars in the world and you can just keep going and going and going and going, but what good does it do you? Right? There's the balance, sort of like you were talking about, Dave. Go ahead. You looked like you had something.
Well, I'm thinking about in depth again when that time comes. When you think of the Christians who've gone on before us, when I think of the great examples in the Lord's church of brethren who suffered painfully and remained humble and just was an example. I think of I go back to Wes Woodside and all the pain that he was in prior to his death, but he always had a smile. He was a picture of a Christian man, even in his sufferings, who gave all glory to God. And people like that, and others, Virgil, and you could just go through names, and those are the things that live on. Even though that person may have passed, their examples in Christ live on in our lives because we see them, we understand the great example that they were, and those are things to imitate. And, you know, when Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ, you have brethren who have done the same very thing in their lives, and they're worth remembering and mimicking, and to do that, to follow in those examples. So when a person dies, what was your life? What was your example? And will people remember the child of God that you were? And did you live it according in faith and follow him according to that? Those are the things people remember. When a person's not remembered, within 6 months, a normal person, when they die, they're forgotten. They're not remembered anymore. Because why? There was nothing in their life that stood out. But the faith in Christ always stands out, and it is remembered.
With that, we'll end and close. Thank you.